bah, Father was not yet born. Oh, for the people, oh, yeah, 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 for the people. Peace, for the people who are gone. Yeah, bah, for the ones not yet born. Whoa, for the people, oh, yeah, 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 for the people.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Swan.
And this is Nasa.
And you're listening, to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. We have James in the studio. He's coming back a lot these days. Always a pleasure to have him. He's waving to you guys and not speaking into his mic.
My mom used to always get mad at me when I would wave goodbye on the phone because she'd be like, who's seeing that, Nasa? Nobody. Say goodbye.
Valid.
Yeah, but, except I only ever do things for me.
We also have a very special guest who is the real star of this show, Ashley Sanders, a writer, mastermind behind the legendary discussion night started at BYU, a storyteller, activist, and community organizer who is now working at Move to Amend and Peaceful Uprising. Is that old?
I need to update my Facebook. That's a little old, but recent.
But
recent.
You have been involved.
I have done that. That's not a lie. It's just.
And you're still working in.
Now I'm a writer. I'm a freelance writer. So I just sit at home in my underwear and spin some words. So.
The dream, man.
The dream.
I found. I'm searching as we're talking. So, anyways, I also did some Facebook stalking, obviously, and saw that for the last 8 months, is it still 8 months or is it 9 months now that you've been writing an essay or story?
So the last, like a story a month, is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
that was my New Year's goal. I declared it around a fire in a drunken stupor, and somebody said, you don't really mean it. You're not going to write an essay or a story a month. And I said, yes, I will. And then I counted 2 weeks ago, and I have done it. So
congratulations.
I think that's my first New Year's goal ever still going at mid-year, so...
That's amazing.
Thanks. I'm feeling good.
Are you submitting these stories?
That's what I'm doing right now, yeah. And that involves all my least favorite activities, like online research and making Excel spreadsheets. So I'm doing like an hour a day. But I just sent out my first submission yesterday. So I'm on the path.
Okay. So Occupy the Narrative says it's various artists, various authors, but you are included.
You know, I think it was probably from this long zine I wrote during Occupy, and it's probably like an excerpt from that, but I didn't even know about it, so.
Okay, I'll post the link, and everyone that's like, what are they talking about, and why is Swan so confused, we will share it with you once my research pays off.
Yes, perfect.
Great. And then I mentioned, I think, that we like to start with a writing exercise. We might switch that up, but I want this week to do a free write triggered by authors talking about writing and their process. So we're going to hear from Margaret Atwood 10 tips for writing, 10 rules, if you will. Take this with a grain of salt. Someone wise once said, be very careful when writers talk about their process because... First of all, that's their process, and you're probably not always aware of what is going on when you're writing. But I thought that might be an interesting prompt to maybe like trigger some thoughts about our processes. So it's a format called river writing, and so it's basically I'll read, you find the line or the concept that's sticking out to you, use that as a starting place for a free write. We'll write for about 5 minutes, and then an invitation to share what you wrote or... not, depending on how comfortable you are. And always, all I say is thank you. We're not going to sit and pick anything apart or criticize you or judge you.
So does any response, anything that comes up that you want to say?
Any response. So
free write.
And
okay.
I love Margaret Atwood, and she's so sharp as a person and as a writer. So I'm eager to see where we'll go with this. Okay. One, take a pencil to write with on airplanes. Pens leak. But if the pencil breaks, you can you can't sharpen it on the plane because you can't take knives with you. Therefore, take two pencils. Two, if both pencils break, you can do a rough sharpening job with a nail file of the metal or glass type. Three, take something to write on. Paper is good. In a pinch, pieces of wood or your arm will do. Four, if you're using a computer, always safeguard new text with a memory stick. Five, do back exercises. Pain is distracting. Six, hold the reader's attention. Parentheses, this is likely to work better if you can hold your own. End of parentheses. But you don't know who the reader is, so it's like shooting a fish with a slingshot in the dark. What fascinates A will bore the pants off of B. Seven, you will most likely need a thesaurus, a rudimentary grammar book, and a grip on reality. This latter means there's no free lunch. Writing is work. It's also gambling. You don't get a pension plan. Other people can help you a bit, but essentially you're on your own. Nobody is making you do this. You choose to do it, so don't whine. Eight, you can never read your own book with the innocent anticipation that comes with that first delicious page of a new book because you wrote the thing. You've been backstage. You've seen how the rabbits were smuggled into the hat. Therefore, ask a reading friend or two to look at it before you give it to anyone in the publishing business. This friend should not be someone with whom you have a romantic relationship unless you want to break up. Nine, sit down in the middle of the woods. If you're lost in the plot or blocked, retrace your steps to where you went wrong. Then take the other road and or change the person, change the tense, change the opening page. 10. Prayer might work, or reading something else, or constant visualization of the Holy Grail that is the finished, published version of your resplendent book. So there's some tips from the humorous Margaret Atwood. We'll start writing for about 5 minutes.
Thank you.
about one more minute wrapping up thoughts, finishing that idea. Last word, that last thought. Music got really intense. I liked it though.
Yeah, it ramped up.
It's Ludovico Einaudi. Do you know how to pronounce his name?
I don't.
So if you want to Facebook stalk Ashley as well, you'll find a video of him playing on like the Arctic ice caps.
Yeah.
Like on this piece of ice.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. I got chills watching it. So I was like, oh, we should use that music.
I love it. I watched it at 3 a.m. and just cried myself to sleep, basically.
And like, oh, maybe we'll listen to it because there's this moment where ice falls and you're just like,
yes.
You can hear it and he just doesn't break. He keeps playing and you're just like, oh my god.
Yes.
It's pretty crazy. That being said, does anyone want to read first? Bravery?
Come on. Mm-hmm.
I'll read first. I usually volunteer first. So. Do back exercises. Pain is distracting. One of my dear friends, Alethea, is an artist, and we occasionally had painting parties. We usually took a walk and sometimes gathered weeds and stray flowers to fill various vases in her home. Then we would find music or settle into a comfortable silence and paint. As something came to mind, we would talk about it. If we got hungry, we would stop and make toast and eggs or smoothie. I truly believe this satisfaction of physical needs helped ground me and opened up the doors to creativity. I am deeply grateful for friends who move and inspire me to move. There is a saying of something is moving you or being moved by something, a film, a painting, a book. Isn't writing at its most basic simply movement of pen or pencil on paper? Boom. Anyone else willing to share?
I'll go ahead. She sat at the chair furthest from the door, but closest to the window. Before she could sit, the seat had to be adjusted, facing toward the inside, but not so much that she could not feel the warmth of the light outside. In front of her, a binder of loose leaf lined paper, blank, two pencils, and a cup of tea. The type inside was the only variable, though lately she was taken by mint. She was alone, but there was a distinct aura about her that made me think this was by choice. She never began writing before noon. Perhaps this is why I felt I could approach. There was still 10 minutes.
Thank you. James, Ashley, either of you willing to share?
I'll do it. I'm ready.
Well.
Okay. I like Margaret Atwood's emphasis on just writing, on scraps of wood or whatever you have. For a long time, I was the person who claimed to need all the pencils perfectly sharpened and all the perfect blank paper in the world before I could start. For years, I couldn't get myself to write. I thought the conditions had to be perfect. But the conditions are never perfect. The problem is I thought I had to be perfect. Perfect before I started. So I waited and waited, and I would write whole stories in my head and then get mad when I got stuck. Finally, I realized that you can't solve a problem until you've created it. So create it. Fail so you can outwit your own failure. Write a first sentence, any sentence, and go from there. And maybe one day your sentences will add up to a world. Get used to criticism. The first story I ever wrote, I showed to my girlfriend. I broke Margaret Atwood's rule. And she didn't like it. And I remember crying on a street corner while she tried to reassure me. And since then, I realized, you know, right after you have a baby, you don't want anybody to call it ugly. But after a week, maybe, you know, you're ready. So give it out then. So
thank you. James?
Yeah, I kind of didn't finish anything, but like I ever do.
Can you speak into the mic?
Oh, sorry. I kind of didn't finish anything.
You wrote some words, though, yeah?
I just kind of have a mash of words. I will try. A list of 10 very important things to know and do. Remember to follow it carefully. Don't skip any steps unless those steps don't matter. Number one, start. Unless you're already doing the thing, then just keep going. Number two, don't dogmatically follow the list. Never mind that one. Three, continue doing the thing that you are doing until you are not getting any results, or if you finish. More nonsense like that.
Thank you. I liked the list. I'd like to hear the rest at some point when you've cleaned it or not.
I couldn't read my own writing. The problem there.
I was also having that. Someone told me my writing looks like someone dropped a pile of yarn on the ground. I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, that's it's that tactile process of writing, and then you go back to transcribe or even read it, and you're like, maybe I have a problem. Maybe I wasn't paying enough attention in first grade when they talked about what shapes letters are. And I was like, got it. Follow the dots. Done. Like, do you guys have to do that? Do you remember doing that?
Yes. That was always one of my favorite things.
You're like, I'm so good.
So you're all set now?
I had a teacher who made us write tiny, tiny little maps. Mm-hmm. And if they were illegible, then we got a bad grade.
Like points deducted.
So this is how my writing became very neat. It's because I had to write it like it's such a small level.
So I've noticed, and I'm curious if you guys have something similar. My writing changes from day to day, week to week, but mostly day to day. I look back at journals I wrote when I was 16, and it's like the same. And I look back at journals I wrote, you know, over the past month, and it's like I'm like schizophrenic in my penmanship. I'm like, some days are like, and some days are like really like elegant and refined. And I've been complimented on my handwriting, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like, because it's all over the spectrum. Do you guys? Is maybe it's mood based?
My handwriting is always bad, but I did read a book. There are handwriting therapists. Did you know that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they'll like try
and
to solve couples' problems through like how hard do you press when you write. So apparently, if you press hard, you have a harder time letting go of things. And I press really hard, so
you're like deliberate.
Yeah,
like I'm writing.
Yeah.
It's an action based activity.
Now I want to know what my handwriting says about me. Maybe there's something my handwriting is trying to tell me.
Yes,
outside of just
lot.
The words on the page.
There's like a field of research that's like your handwriting reveals these attributes about your personality, like whether it slants to the right or the left.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not remembering the name of it, but I'll try and put in the show notes.
If your G's or Y's go really low,
yeah.
You have a very high libido, for example. I know that.
Oh, very,
yeah. I have a book.
I'll
loan it to you.
Some phallic symbols in your penmanship.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like that might explain the change in my Y's and G's between like high school and now, because they've gotten much shorter.
Oh, no. The shortening of the Y's
going
and G's.
Going down, going down. Ashley, were you telling a story at an event last night?
I went to a comedy show called Show Tell Show, and there are comics, and then between the comics, people have to bring a show and tell item up and do like a 1-minute performance about their item.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left the house and I tucked a couple of things in my bag, being like, I want to check it out and see what the scene is like, and maybe I'll get up on stage. Then I got there and only one person had signed up to do the storytelling thing, and he showed a Newsies. He had an autographed copy of the movie Newsies, which was my favorite childhood movie, mm-hmm. by Christian Bale. And then no one else signed up, so they were, like, pressuring people. So then a bunch of people signed up, including me. And my show and tell item was I had a baby 5 years ago, and I have a jar with her dried up umbilical cord and also pills that I made out of my own placenta. So I showed those on the stage.
You didn't eat them?
I am really bad at taking pills, so I spent hours making them and then I never took them. So they've just been waiting for a show and tell event such as this. So I won $20. You guys.
Oh, last night.
Congratulations.
That's wonderful.
People love a good placenta pill.
Yeah.
I think people are just excited by talking about things that people don't ordinarily feel comfortable talking about.
It's really weird. Every time I tell a story or write a story or anything, I'm always the girl who people are like, that was really brave. And I'm like, was it? Well, I thought that was very normal.
Okay, so a couple things. The article I was talking about, populism isn't dead, it's marching.
Yes,
what
I did write that.
19th century farmers can teach occupiers about how to keep going. And that was in January of 2012. And you can find it on Truthout. And it's really well written, and there's lots of information there. The other thing I want to talk about is the bee, because you told a story, and in your retelling of it, the Catalyst magazine did an article, because you're so popular. this is a quick internet research. You weren't going to do it, and then you ended up doing it, and it went well. You put your name in the hat, and then you almost took it right back out.
Yeah, is this the one about, I guess it sounds
getting
like
a period at a wedding?
Yep, okay. For some reason, I've become, like, the cat lady of storytelling, and I only talk about, like, periods and bodies. Yeah, I told two stories, and one was a period story, and then I told another one later about giving birth and adoption and depression. But
I was looking for that one, because that one I read when it was released and was like, who is this person? Like, because that's around the time you became part of my world.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, I told two different ones, but the first one is it's a story about how I broke up with my boyfriend, went on a road trip with him after I broke up with him, which is always an ill-advised idea, to his best friend's wedding, and ended up starting my period and bleeding all over the best man's light gray tuxedo.
How did you bleed on the best man?
That is a really good
question. Were you sitting in his lap?
We had to cram into a minivan to get to the reception. It was Mormon, obviously, minivan. But we had to cram into the car, and there was no place to sit. So he's like, just sit on my lap. And I kept resisting, and he thought it was because I didn't, like, know him very well. And he's like, come on, just sit down. And I was like, oh, if you only knew. And then I got up, and blood all over the place. It was terrifying.
That's
for everyone.
These
involved.
Things happen. Yes,
they happen to me a lot more than
my
they
problem.
Should.
Since we're sharing stories, I was really forgetful when I first got my period. So I'd be like, "Oh, I need to change my pad," but I didn't have one in the bathroom or something. So I remember this one time I knew that I had it, and I was like la 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 in my room, and then all of a sudden my brother was like, you're bleeding. And I was horrified. And he was like, why are you bleeding? What's wrong? He's so confused. And I was like 16, like not going to tell him what was going on with my body. I was like, leave me alone. And I like ran out of the room, like changed all my clothes really fast. And it is something I think there's something, I don't know if it's cultural, but it seems almost like built in embarrassment. Like, I'm sorry this is happening. Like,
yes. Yeah, I was terrified. When I was little, I was like, I would pray to God every night, like, please don't give me boobs or a period. Like, please, I will do anything you say. And he didn't deliver, so see you later, God. Yeah, so
we're done here.
That was the breakdown. No, I just decided, after being super shy, I was like, I'm never going to be shy about this again. And now I'm just the person who makes people awkward at storytelling nights, so.
Yeah, and inspires their own stories.
I love that, though. I think this should be something that's more thrown in people's faces, because it happens every gosh darn month. I think I can say goddamn. I don't know why I didn't. I felt the need to censor myself.
Well, and this is something you said in the Catalyst article that I'll link. You said, "I always love turning the conversation into a narrative because I believe in the power of stories to bring people to life and into conversation." And I think, case in point, that's what we're doing right now. It seems like, you know, the act of telling your story empowers other people to tell their stories, but also the act of being a willing listener gives them the space to say what they maybe haven't said before.
Yeah, and I think stories are genius because they're kind of like dodges. You're like, I'm just telling a story, you know, I'm not telling you what I actually feel or think. And then everybody's like, oh, I'm just listening to a story. I don't necessarily relate, but it's this great secret way that people get together and empathize without having to reveal things about themselves that they don't want to, you know, or mm-hmm. that, and then they're all revealed to each other through it. So I love that. It's like this magic thing.
Yeah. You brought a quote that you wanted to share.
yeah, it is a quote.
You just mentioned when you walked in, and so
yeah,
I was reading,
I'm taking this class through the Writer's Studio, and I really like it because as I read in my free write, I have a really big problem with perfectionism, and the kind of methodology of the Writer's Studio is you just copy people for a really long time, and so you read a 2-page excerpt of a different author's work every week, and then you pinpoint some things about it that make it what it is, make it this unique thing, and then you have to go and kind of write your own version of that, and it's just 2 pages, so it's really freeing because you're like, oh, I'm just copying, and it's just 2 pages,
yeah,
and it's kind of unlocked my brain. But I read this guy named Gary Lutz, who has a lot of short stories I really like, and he's super weird, and a lot of people don't like him because he uses really, like, his language is just like an invented dictionary, and he writes about really tragic characters that are very lonely, but all they can be is tough. And anyway, he's great, but I liked his thoughts on writing. And he says, my stories are probably not even story. Let's see. Oh, he says, my own characters, he doesn't like backstory for his characters, so his characters kind of appear on the page, and he says, my own characters are just remainders of people, I guess, and their backstory, a term I never warmed to, doesn't much concern me. I am concerned instead with the wonderless ways in which they're finished. My stories are probably not even stories at all, but just sobs in clausal form. And then he says, to me, language is matter. It is a substance to be fingered and disturbed. All sorts of stuff can be pinned onto a word or poked into it. I like to fasten an unaccustomed affix to the base of a perfectly drab noun or adjective. Oddballery of that kind appears to suit my narrators, who are forever in search of further, fussier ways to insist upon their difference. And I just loved that description of language as this, like, malleable, kind of, like, monstrous, amazing thing.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
I'm curious to hear about your journey into freelancing, because I think that's something a lot of people dream of doing, myself included, and don't actually get around to doing.
Yeah. Well, I kind of landed in it in a very strange way. I did community organizing, as my outdated Facebook page suggests, for a really long time, and I really cared about it and still care about it, but I got really burnt out, and so I just quit and didn't know what I was going to do next, had a bunch of super, super weird in-between jobs, and then my friend asked me...
What were some of the weird in-between jobs?
Oh my God. I'm trying to think of, like, what times which jobs occurred, because I've been, like, a vacuum salesperson and, like, a person who delivers yellow pages to people's doors. But at this time, I think I was planning field trips for, like, young kids to learn about science and working at an acupuncture clinic and selling my body to science for medical studies. So those three things mainly. And then my friend just said, hey, you want to start writing travel stories for this magazine? We need somebody, and you are a good writer. So I said yes. And then it's kind of interesting. I think, like, if you find one way in, then you just start to know more and more people. It's the same old thing as in anything. But so I started writing travel stuff, and then I started writing, like, humor travel stuff, which is just basically like, take this travel thing and make it sound like millennial snark, basically. And then I started writing legal. I write for the law, which is, like, the weirdest thing ever. So I write, like, legal briefs. So I just write all sorts of weird shit.
And different types of writing. Someone told me when, I think I read that people who are lawyers actually are really good editors because it has to be really like specific and correct and logical.
It's really helped me because I can kind of just be like sprawling and like, blah, and so it's helped me to just hone it in. But then it's funny too, if anybody wants to write for a law firm, they're like so impressed with English minds because they never learned to write creatively and they write in the passive voice. So when I like make a metaphor, everybody's like, ooh, you know, like cooing over it like it's a baby or something. So they're like, how do you write creatively? So I think it's like a left brain, right brain thing, you uh-huh. know, coming together.
Nice. Yeah, that's really great. So this writing class, have you taken writing classes before?
Yeah, I have. And I've liked all the writing classes I've taken a lot. But this format has been so liberating for me. Yeah, I honestly just got to a point which precipitated my drunken goal setting over New Year's where I was like, I'm just never going to write. I'm just going to say I'm going to write and I'm actually just never going to actually do it.
Yeah.
Because I just would feel there was like a block that it wasn't writer's block. It was like a permanent metal, like 2-ton block. And I think this class just really helped me more than any others. Just like, get your thoughts on the page. You thought of a sentence, go with it. Like, try to sound like this person. And while you're doing it, you're like creeping up on yourself in the side lane, you know?
Yeah, I'm really curious to try that because when you're talking about it, reminds me of my first experience with river writing. So it was with Nancy Moore in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I was similar. I'm like, I want to be a writer. I want to be a writer. I want to be a writer. I'm like, I haven't written anything for myself since like high school, mm-hmm. early high school. And I go back and read that and I'm blown away. I was like, I wrote that. And I try to write, and this blank page would just laugh at me, and then I'd have to go brush my teeth or walk. Like, I just everything and anything except writing. And for this, I just had to show up with a pen, and then when I walked out the door, I was done. And so for me, that was kind of the liberating aspect of, like, there's no homework, there's no pressure. Mm-hmm. You go, you're inspired by a poem. You let thoughts flow and it can be shitty and it can be grammatically incorrect and you can have spelling errors and you can have not the ability to read your own writing, and that was all okay. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, but
yeah, that's really similar. It feels very nice. Like, you just have to write in this moment. That's all your job is.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole like creativity sparks more creativity, mm-hmm. and what you feed grows.
Yes.
All that stuff. Neil Gaiman also said just like create a time to write and sit there and write, or sit there and do nothing. And do nothing doesn't mean check your phone or Tumblr, or it means sit there and do nothing or sit there and write. And he's like, eventually you'll start writing because doing nothing is really boring.
Yes. Gaiman for the win.
Yeah. So. Do you have any processes besides the class that you use when you're writing?
I'm just going to sound weirder and weirder as I go along.
Yay!
But I took a class I think it's interesting to meet people who are very prescriptive about how other people should write, because a lot of times it doesn't work for people. But there are a lot of people who are like, no, this is it.
This is, you know, how you do it.
But I like those. I like bravado people. So I'm like, I'll give you a chance. But I took a class that was like based on this Robert Burroughs writing philosophy called From Where You Dream, and it's called trance writing. And he believes that if you basically just like trance out, like hard, like your roommate thinks you're weird hard, you know, like go all the way down into some like weird subconscious realm, he thinks all the imagery is there, your whole life is composted there, and if you write from like a dream place, then you will create like a symmetry in your language and your cadence and your images and your plot. And so I used to do that pretty intensively, and I would write the weirdest stories imaginable. Like, I would look at them and be like, this is what I had to say. So now I do a kind of modified version of that, and I'll just kind of bliss out pretty hard, and then I'll just wait for a first line.
You don't have to divulge, but do you use substances, or how do you get into a trans state?
I made a homemade eye mask for myself out of leather and beads, and I wear that, and I like listen to drum music. It's like the most new age thing in the world, and I don't do that all the time, but I do that sometimes, and then I'll just, like, the first sentence that comes to me, I'll just trust it and write it. And that's been huge for just starting, because I have sentences come into my head, but I'm like, oh, they're not a story yet, you know? Yeah. So I just write them, and then I just say, and the next sentence, and the next sentence, and it's just like taking dictation from some muse-soaked secretary. You know, it's just like, I'm the secretary for this thing.
It seems like, because in meditation, there's, like, the levels of consciousness, and there's, you know, sleeping, there's consciousness, there's higher consciousness, like, universal subconscious, and then like meditating is like a in-between state, mm-hmm. but it's a different level of consciousness. It sounds like this is like the writing meditation of like you're getting to this different level of consciousness with your brain so that you can do this thing that you don't do when you're just conscious.
And it's like when you're in a dream, usually, unless you're lucid dreaming, you don't ask yourself what your dream means. You're just dreaming, and that's the associative, like, wild child part of your brain that's just like, this color and this thing, and then we're here. And I think maybe that's what a rough draft is. It's just like a very suspended state. Like, it's just like you suspend disbelief, you go with the images, and then you see what you have. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good, and then you edit like a sober tyrant or something.
Like a sober tyrant.
Yeah. Like, you're hard on the editing, but you're, like, super free with the first
part. When you're working, so, for example, the pieces you've been writing monthly, when you're working on a piece, how much of the total time it takes to complete a piece is spent editing?
I'm trying to get better at editing, so I'm, like, trying to ramp up how much I edit, because I get a little bored, and I'm like, eh, I'm a brat about it. But I think probably, like, probably half of the time, I would say. The other thing is just this class, trying on words. Like, if you try to sound like somebody, all of a sudden you're paying really close attention to how you're writing. So that's less of a meditative state, but it's more a close attention state, and that's also been really helpful for me.
Yeah, it's almost like a writing club instead of a book club, because in a book club, you're reading a book knowing you're going to have to talk about it. In this, you're writing in the style of this person knowing... like, I don't know, that knowing that that's what you're doing.
Exactly. And it makes you pay more close attention and see how they did what they did.
Different cadences. Mm-hmm. Is there a writer that you've resonated with? You read something from, who was that again?
That was Gary Lutz. And I love him because he's just like a language magician. But I also, I like a lot of people right now. I've been reading Amy Hempel. Has anybody here read her before? Short stories?
I know the name. I don't know her.
You'll look at the cover and you'll be like, who just learned clip art and designed this cover? It's like the worst cover in the world for the book I'm thinking about. It's called Reasons to Live. But she is such a master of like a really short, taut, but like life blood story. And so I'm reading her a lot and I like her. She also writes a lot about dogs, so you might like her. Ooh. And she edited like a collection of poets writing poems that were supposedly written by their dogs. So she's also a dog person.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
My dog is a poet. What is the best piece of writing advice you've been given?
I think... honestly, I'm trying to think. Well, I think of two things. One, I think of my English teacher from my junior year of high school. She had us all come in to class, and she said, everybody write, describe your grandmother to me. Write some paragraphs describing a grandmother. And people wrote it, and then she had them read it. And then she said, I'm closing my eyes, and I don't see any of your grandmothers. And she basically meant that everybody's like, my grandma is nice. My grandma buys me... thanks. My grandma, very, you know, she's like, not everybody's grandma's does that, but like a lot of people's, what is it that makes your grandma? So that's just a way of talking about the classic show, not tell, but it stuck with me and it helps me to think like, if I close my eyes, do I see what I'm talking about? Or if somebody else were reading, would they see it? Mm-hmm. The other thing is honestly from The Artist's Way from Julia Cameron's book, I like that she talks about how writers' lives don't have to be unstable, and how people have this idea that genius or creativity. Yeah, whatever. And she's like, no, it has more to do with nourishing yourself. And so I like her idea of artist dates, like take time out of your week to just follow your nose. Like, I think that's what most kids do, is they're just playing or they're messing around and they're not like, what is this for? I don't know, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think making time as an adult to go and just observe and be intuitive and do something you really like for no reason is part of how creativity works. And I think that's really helped me, like, chill out and also get more ideas.
Well, I feel like kind of throwing back to meditation, it builds this entry point to a relaxed state of mind that mm-hmm. allows for things to come in.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember which scientist. He would fall asleep in an armchair with keys in his hand. And when he dropped the keys, he would wake up and, like, have an idea and immediately start to, like, write or work on a problem again.
I love that.
So just that, like, in between dreaming and awake, which is kind of similar to the trance stuff that you practice. Cool. We like to end our shows with a rapid-fire series of questions.
Sweet.
And we can talk about it a lot, or the answer can be, I don't know. Nasa, would you like to start?
Yeah, sure. Is there a book that you, keep meaning to get to but, like, never do?
Yeah, it's probably Lydia Yuknovich's Small Backs of Children. But it's really sad, so.
Yeah, it sounds sad. Is it nonfiction?
It's a novel about a war photographer and an image that they capture, but it's a really difficult, I guess I've heard, a really difficult book to read, but also everybody raves about it.
Yeah. It's like one of those tragically beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
For me, Elegance of the Hedgehog was like that. Have you read that?
I haven't. I've heard it's awesome, though.
It was, like, just the language, you know, speaking about, I wish I could step into her words because I was in love with the way she said things. And then also the plot at the very end. I think it's the, like, first time I've openly cried while reading in a long time. Great. I don't know if I have one lately that I've been meaning to get around to. I think I'm just trying to plow through all the library books that are due back in the next couple of days.
Like, I just have keep renewing my library books because I'm like, I'm going to read you.
Yeah, I want to stop doing that because I'll go to renew and it's been like renewed 14 times. And I'm like, am I really going to read this at this point?
You've had 14 this out times. For a year. Maybe reevaluate.
Am I really going to read this right now, or should I put it back into the world and let it come back in my life when I'm ready? I don't know. James, any books you've been meaning to read? Harry Potter?
You mean read to me?
Yeah.
No, I have a book in my suitcase right now, but I can't remember the name of it.
So it's obviously...
It's really right up there on the...
Great. I'm going to steal one of Nasa's other favorite questions. I noticed that you're like, these are my favorites, so I will always ask them. So, and also a quick plug. Last week, I couldn't remember where this came from. This question comes from the book Shocked, My Mother, Schiaparelli, and Me by Patricia Volk. And she said, years later, when I asked friends, how old were you when you read your first transformative book? They said the same thing. They are prepubescent, 10 or 11, 12, the most. The magic age for the book that changes everything. So that's my question is, was there a book that influenced your transition into puberty?
Oh, man. Yeah. it was definitely starring Sally J. Friedman as herself, they're all the young adult authors of my youth are converging into one big name, but I can't remember the author right now. Who's the author who is like kind of writes about salacious junior high things?
Something Valley High.
No,
wait. You're not talking like old school, like
old
Judy
school.
Bloom.
Judy Bloom. Yeah, it's a Judy Bloom book. Yes, way to go. And it's just all about like, it's about bodies changing and about friendships as you get older and about like, it's about a Jewish girl and I learned about sitting Shiva and like all. It's anyway. I was like crazy. And then it ended and I was devastated. And I felt like a friend had stopped existing. So I just read it again and again for like my whole adolescence.
What was the storyline of this book? Because
she goes to the beach and she meets like a new friend.
Oh my God,
she starts
totally
her period.
Read that
really?
Book. Yes. And that you travel with
called?
Her. I don't remember.
It's starring Sally J. Friedman as herself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's like you start with her when she's like 12 or 13 mm-hmm. and it takes her through to like 30 or so.
No,
right?
I can't. I've read it like 10 times and I don't remember.
So, and that's like, speaking of books you've been meaning to read, she's been on my list for forever and I've never read anything by Judy Bloom. And for so many people, and especially our generation, she was like...
Yeah. She also wrote a story, I don't know what it's called, but it's about a girl who gets her period and her mom makes her a cake and throws her a party. And I was so shy at the time when I read that I was like, disgusting. I hope nobody ever even knows or throws me a party. And now I'm like, that was an awesome thing to write about.
Yeah.
My mom made me read the Judy Bloom books because she...
She's like, I'm not giving you the talk here.
No. She definitely also gave me the talk. But it was one of those things, like, she snuck read them when she was young because she came, like, I think I could be aging my mom more than I should. But, like, she was, like, six or so when they were super popular. Mm-hmm. And so she, like, snuck them and read them all.
I love that she's, like, pushing to give you permission to do the things that she wasn't allowed to do.
So she's like, you got to read all of these. These are going to be so good for you when you go into your womanhood.
Yeah, blank Judy Bloom check.
Warping your children.
Exactly.
Nisa, do you have another question you'd like to ask?
Wait, I want to answer that question.
Oh, James, was there a book that influenced your transition into puberty?
Yeah, it was Waiting for Godot.
Oh.
I mean, honestly, it's almost an emotional event. Because it made sense.
Mm. Mm.
It was hard to read a second book. I mean, I'd read other books.
Oh, my gosh.
But the next book was difficult because
that's
not the same
such
thing.
An interesting book to have that kind of an influence. I think because it's something that, what am I trying to say here? That, like, adults are still kind of reeling with?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it turned me into the nihilist that I am.
Yeah. That book was one of the most profound books I've ever read. And actually, the first story that I wrote once I made my goal is a riff on Waiting for Godot. And it's about two young queer homeless girls walking up and down Second Avenue talking about that book, about that play. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's, like, my favorite. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Cool.
Nisa,
oh, right. I'm the one who has to go next. All right. You know what? I'm going to do this one because it is also one of my favorites. So do you have a guilty pleasure. That's the terminology.
Oh,
a guilty pleasure regarding like a podcast or a Netflix show or even just a TV show where you sit down and you're like, I can't believe I'm watching this again. And then you'll marathon it.
Wait, I want to say, so when I think of Ashley, I think of guilty pleasures.
I'm so proud.
Of your guilty pleasures. It's like strange guilt, but...
Like what?
I don't know. It's just you're always going off about, there's this thing that you love that you're embarrassed by. Like your stories.
Yeah.
But you're so proud of the thing that you're embarrassed of. You're so proud of this piece of reality that you've touched.
Yeah.
That you should be embarrassed by, you should be horrified by.
Yeah.
But you're not. It's like, here, people. It's like, this is it.
Yeah, my cousin likes to say everybody gets their Twinkie. Like, they're completely unnourishing, like, kind of sugary, sweet little fluff ball. And my most embarrassing ones are, I love stories, like TV shows about rich people and their dramatic lives. So, like, Gossip Girl.
Dramatic lives?
Yes. I'm like, what is going to happen? Is she going to get that dress fitted in time for the ball? Like, oh my God.
I must admit, I've never seen an episode of Gossip
Girl.
Oh,
you'll hate every second of yourself, but you'll love every second of the show.
Maybe that's your experience.
Yeah, exactly. I can't tell you. You should try it and see what you think.
I've been watching Gilmore Girls is the one I'm trying to catch up on because I didn't watch it growing up. And so, you know, it's very formative for a lot of people. And she reads lots of books in that. Yeah. So, yes.
I just recently, not rediscovered, but got, like, I'm watching Frasier.
Oh, I bet I'd understand it now.
I know, right? Aside from the fact that I realized I'm younger than Frasier's son on the show, just barely, which was freaky, But more than anything, I realized I want to, like, hop on Niles. Like, I want to have hardcore sex with Niles. Like, I've never, yes. Well, I've had that urge before, but I didn't realize it. I was just watching it, and I was like, God damn it, every time he's on, I just...
You're just like...
I just want to give him, like, a blowjob. like, it's just, I want to so bad.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
That is awesome.
And I don't know that I've ever felt that way about someone I've seen on a screen. Cary Grant did it for me, I think, a couple times. I was like... Hot damn.
Yes.
But apparently he's not a very nice person, so that pretty much killed it for me. I'd see that, you know, it's hard to know. James, do you have an addiction? Podcast or Netflix James. Addiction?
Oh, God, every podcast.
No, that's not true. You have your favorites.
Oh, yeah, but I'm like...
This American Life, The Moth, you introduced me to those.
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I hate it when
StoryCorps. I first time I heard it was with you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They are in New York. They have nights. Do you ever go?
I haven't gone, but I
we should go because I've been meaning to go.
Yeah, I would love that.
To one of their nights. A lot of them are hosted at Housing Works, which is one of my favorite bookstores.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The idea of going to a StoryCorps thing just bothers me because I don't want to know that my stories are mundane. So I want them to remain in my head and be exotic. I don't want to put them out onto the world and let them just be pedestrian, just normal stories. I'm a bad person.
So you don't want to ever publish anything?
It scares me.
I think that's maybe, I mean, we talk about perfectionism. I think that's part of it is I'm afraid. I just want it to be good. I don't know. I think my desires are getting away in the way of my process because I think... just the other day, I was like, I want to write something really dark. And I'm like, what if I'm not a dark writer? Like, I want to write something really creepy that disturbs people. And I'm like, I don't think I need to do that. Or if it happens, it happens. But I think at this point, I just need to write. Is there something that you do to cross-train or prepare for writing?
Do you want to start? I'm trying to think.
Cross-train to prepare for writing.
What do you mean by cross-train?
So, for example, like with my river writing, how my friend would go on a walk before she would sit down to be a painter. But I think that a lot of writers talk about going for a walk when they're feeling frustrated or before they sit down to write.
Wait, you've kind of already answered the question with your mask and the beads and the drumming.
Yeah. I think the most helpful thing for me, honestly, I'm trying to get myself to go on more walks, but it's really hard. Like, I had to know that point when you're like, you're not going to make any progress if you keep sitting here. So I want to go on more walks. But what helps me the most is just to sit down with somebody and to say, this is what I'm trying to do. This is where I feel stuck. And just have somebody listen.
Mm.
And it's hard to find somebody to talk in that with that amount of detail with about writing, but I just stick it on my girlfriend, and it's super helpful to pinpoint what the problem is.
And your relationship is still
strong. We're still together, so I mean,
lots of love.
Eat that, Margaret Atwood.
Well, I've recently come across two things that I haven't implemented yet, but I'm planning on.
That's everything for me. I haven't done it yet, but I'm planning on it.
Is being actively interviewed, and I think I'm going to pursue that.
Telling stories verbally rather than trying to write them
and then writing them. Getting someone to actually prompt me. They don't even have to sit there, but to have an actual physical prompt. And the other one is the idea of being the Neil Gaiman quote of placing yourself in a place with a writing time and not allowing yourself other things. You just have to sit there. You can write or sit for an hour. Because I've realized that the time in my life that I was most productive, I was completely isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no choice.
In Antarctica?
In Antarctica.
The most isolated.
I was alone. There was nothing to do but write. Kind of a double question. Or Nasa, did you have anything you wanted to add about your process recently? Or
I don't have a I'm so scared of writing. Basically what I need to do in order to write is give myself an outside obligation, so like a writing group or somebody else, and then I tell myself that I'm going to write it tomorrow, that I have plenty of time, that I'm going to write it tomorrow, and then it's a day before it's due, and then all of a sudden, I'm so good at writing.
Yeah, that's me too. So, quick double question, just for Ashley, because we're running out of time. Best book you've read recently, or book that's out and about in your house on display right now?
All right. Well, I want to say Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan novel series, but everybody's talking about that, so I'm going to go with Hanya Yanagihara's People in the Trees.
I like how you say both.
I know, I got him in there. I fooled you.
Done. All right, you've been listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you like what you hear and want to be part of the community, you can check out their website, and you can also become a Patreon and help support independent radio. A dollar a month is like a cocktail a year. Buy us a drink. Empty Orchestra is next, exploring karaoke. And I will leave you with a word. Take it or leave it. Bandy.